Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Reverend Don Lewis coming to you from witchschool.com. Are you looking for the best in pagan and magical education? With more than 12,000 pages, witchschool.com is like having your own personal library with individual learning assistants to help you study. And Witchschool's anyone, anytime, anywhere education system is available any place on earth, anywhere you are and anytime you want it, as long as you have an internet connection. Witchschool's lifetime memberships are a great value. They really do last a lifetime. They've been there for years and they'll be there for years to come. So get your membership today at witchschool.com.
Listening to Pagans Tonight. Pagans unite on Pagans Tonight. Many paths, one network. For over 5 years, we've been the place to connect with the best, brightest, and most trusted voices in the pagan world. Every night is Pagans Tonight.
Hello. Oh my. Excuse me. Hello, and thank you for tuning in today. I am Michael Greywolf, artist, traveler, all-around geek, witch, and brother initiate, and soon-to-be teacher of The Unnamed Path. You're listening to Walking the Unnamed Path, a podcast where we discuss the teachings and techniques given to us by the ancestors and laid out by our late founder, Hyperion. We also touch on topics and ideas pertaining to queer pagan men in general. We're glad you've decided to join us, and we hope you'll be part of the show by calling in at 347-308-8222. You can also hang out in the chat room, which I will be getting up shortly. And you could drop us an email at walkingtheunnamedpath@gmail.com. Give us a follow on Twitter at walking_theup. Or you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/walkingtheunnamedpath. We use our Facebook page a lot, and you know, we respond to quickly whenever we get messages. So probably the most ideal place to connect with myself or Matthew. Speaking of Matthew, Matthew's not going to be with us today. He unfortunately has he kind of got roped into another commitment that he wasn't able to, you know, get out of. So he will unfortunately not be with us today. He does send his regrets for not being here. But, you know, we are very excited for today's episode. On today's episode, we are going to be talking about the topic of astrology, and also interviewing one of our brothers, Bill Skywatcher. Let me go ahead and bring Bill on.
Hi, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm so glad you were able to join me today. I keep wanting to say us. I'm so used to having a co-host.
Well, thank you.
Well, Bill, why don't you tell us a little bit about you, who you are and what you do?
Okay, so I grew up in the Boston area, and in Boston had, at the time, quite a bit of interest in the spiritual aspect of things. There was a great deal of interest in astrology. There was a great deal of interest in the paranormal and the occult, and I dived right into it. I began learning astrology when I was about 14 years old. And I began doing charts for everybody, teaching astrology. I became involved in the astrological community very heavily, and was the president of various organizations, the New England Astrological Association. I was on the board of the National Council of Geocosmic Research. I was also the president of a chapter of Psi Symposium, and I was also at the time a publisher of what we called the New Age Calendar and Forum, which was a way of bringing the occult and pagan and Wiccan communities all together to sort of coordinate and be more powerful, speaking as with one voice, and of letting other people know of what was available within the community and of events that people could go to long before the internet. And then I moved to Los Angeles in the early 1990s and shifted gears a bit and became much more involved in gay politics and the politics of Southern California. I became involved in the politics of West Hollywood, the state of California, and served for a number of years on the West Hollywood Lesbian and Gay Advisory Board, where I was a very strong advocate for gay marriage. Sort of before gay marriage became a popular topic, we had forums and events on the topic. We held a long-term commitment ceremony known as the Affair of the Heart back in 2001, and really tried to make the gay community itself aware of the benefits that gay marriage would bring. And that sort of brings us to where I am now, where it's sort of a mix of being involved in the gay community and in the spiritual community with Wicca and astrology and the tarot cards that I created. So I'm happy to be here to talk with you all.
Awesome. Wow, that's a lot of stuff.
Oh. It is.
I wish I was that involved in politics and just community in general.
I was lucky that I had a lot of opportunities. I just sort of fall my way when just at the right time.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did you hear about and get involved with the Unnamed Path?
I had known Hyperion for a while. Actually, he was introduced to me a number of years ago as an astrologer. And we made contact and we exchanged a few notes and a few emails. But then at Pantheacon, four or five years ago, he did a presentation on raising the crossroads, and he was starting a new project with a new path, a new spiritual path. And I became very interested because I had known Eddie down here and knew about his work and knew about the group that he was starting, and became very interested and signed up for the class. And as they say, I guess the rest is history.
Now, you said you were introduced to him as an astrologer, was he introduced to you as an astrologer, or you just were introduced to him?
At the time, he was very heavily involved in astrology.
Huh. I did not know that. I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense.
Go ahead.
Oh, no. What were you going to say?
Well, I think astrology for him was also sort of a gateway into the community, the paranormal and the esoteric.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
And I think once he became once he got involved in the community, I think he certainly branched out into a wide variety of other disciplines and other areas.
Mm-hmm.
And I think astrology became a lot less of a focus for him.
Mm-hmm. Would you mind sharing any highlights from your apprenticeship when you went through the training?
Sure. One of the biggest highlights for me was the Book of Shadows. It really got me into working with myself and understanding myself better and releasing a tremendous amount of baggage, psychological baggage that I was carrying around with myself. And sort of the ritual that we do at the end was a tremendously liberating experience. I just felt as if I had shed a skin, and I was a new person.
Mm-hmm. And for our listeners, those who have listened to the Unnamed Path podcast, or have even read anything in our Facebook group, when he says the Book of Shadows, I believe he means the Shadow Journal that Eddie talks about in the podcast. Not like
yeah, it's the same thing. Yeah, the same thing.
Yeah, but very cool. Yeah, that exercise was very eye opening for me too. You know, just you know, shadow work in general. That was definitely something. It's something that actually, in a lot of my conversations with many of the other brothers, was one of the main things that they always talk about. It's something that just sticks with them.
Yeah, it's a very powerful experience. It's something that really helps you cleanse your being. I don't know how else to put it. It sort of gives you the opportunity to examine a lot of things about yourself in a very open and honest way, and it really leads to a lot of self-healing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. Now, how has most of us have kind of a separate spiritual path. How has your separate spiritual path evolved since becoming a brother initiate?
It's a good question. I feel as if, you know, I'm a very eclectic witch. I do pick up things from here and there. I've for a long time had my own practice. And I feel that since my apprenticeship, that I feel a greater unity of consciousness, a greater unity of spirituality. The path itself has provided for a framework of being able to understand how a lot of things work, how a lot of people think, a lot of where people are coming from. And it's provided me with a lot of insight into other people's motives and where they're coming from, and also understanding how better to relate to other people, as well as a sort of deeper understanding of deity. I think that's something that also comes with the path, is it sort of helps you focus your own relationship to deity in a way that can be very powerful.
Sam. Sorry, I was just taking that all in and, you know, running it through my head. It's like, yep, yeah, that.
Yeah, sure. And you know, I mean, for myself, you know, I come from a Jewish background, and in the Jewish faith, there's a very strong concentration on the unity of God, and I think what the path has helped me understand better is that it's sort of like a jewel where there's different aspects of God, and there are different aspects depending on how you view and how you relate to deity. And I think that's important. Mm-hmm. I think that's also very powerful.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah. Yep.
Little side note. I did not realize you came from a Jewish background.
Yes.
Most of the other brothers who we've had on the show have all come from a Christian background. So that's very
interesting. And it's very different.
Come from it yourself.
Yes, it is very different. A lot of people in the Wiccan and pagan community come from a Christian background, and it shows. It does show. There's a very different mindset when you come to something like Wicca from a background where there are no representations of deity, where deity is a concept that is held inside, not outside.
Yeah, that. Wow, that's just making my brain go in all sorts of different directions at the moment.
Well, we could have another show about that.
Yes, totally. Now, you know, in the Unnamed Path, when we go after we've gone through our apprenticeship training and whatnot, we are generally initiated under one of our four deities. Would you mind sharing who is your matron or patron?
Yeah, sure. My main patron is the Light God.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always had a very strong relationship with that energy. I'm not quite sure how much we talk about the different deities on the podcast, but I've always felt a very strong relationship with the Light God in terms of sort of understanding the architecture of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
I always sort of have felt that that has been my mission in life. And it sort of fits with a lot of the things that I've been involved in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's provided a depth of experience and understanding that has been very helpful.
Hmm. Okay, cool. Now, the Light God is, you know, the one who is in charge of magic and prophecy. Would you say, would that be like the field you feel more proficient in the Unnamed Path, or do you lean more towards energy healing or any of the other two?
Oh, I would definitely say that magic and prophecy, divination, is probably mm-hmm. my strongest area. I've been doing energy healing for a very, very long time. And I've also done a considerable amount of death walking work and channeling. But again, I do feel that sort of magic and prophecy is probably the strongest relationship that I have.
And that would you tie that into your work with astrology?
Oh, definitely. Astrology, my deck of cards, the I Ching, all of it, really. I mean, in a sense, when I was in Boston, I also had a series of courses that I taught called Reality 101, where you sort of work with your own consciousness and your own consciousness's way of creating your reality. And there are all kinds of dynamics involved in that and all kinds of sort of pathways and how can I put it? Sort of not really laws, but principles that once you understand make things a whole lot easier. It's sort of like looking at the schema of reality and how you fit in. It's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Now, we've touched on it a couple of times. When did you first become interested in astrology?
Oh, when I was just a little kid. I really started out life as a science nerd, and they didn't call us nerds at the time. They called us weirdos, but at the time I was very heavily involved in chemistry and astronomy, and I happened to come across this book in the drugstore called How to Write Your Own Horoscope, and I thought it was an astronomy book, and I opened up the book, and I was hooked, and that was several decades ago. And ever since then, I wanted to learn as much as I could about this fascinating topic of astrology, which is essentially our individual relationship to the cosmos.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that book, you know, How to Write Your Own Horoscope. Do you write horoscopes yourself, or is that something that you don't really touch yourself?
Oh, yeah. No, I have written, you know, if someone comes to me for a chart and they want stuff, the chart written out, I can do that. I have certainly done that in the past. It's a very long process. I mean, it's much easier to have a discussion about a chart than to sit down and write stuff up. But I have done that, and I actually have written a couple of astrology books, one that I'm sending around now to various publishers.
Oh. Could you tell us a little bit about your book?
The book is called, tentatively called The Cycle, the Path, and the Journey. And it is a book about the zodiac. It's a new way of looking at the zodiac. It divides the zodiac up into 72 signs, Sabian symbol signs. Sabian symbols were a set of symbols and meanings of each degree of the zodiac, originally created by Mark Edmund Jones back in the 1920s. And then released in a book in 1953 that was then sort of reworked by Dane Brugiar back in the 70s. But the fascinating thing about the Sabian symbols is that they generate patterns throughout the zodiac, and those patterns have meaning, and they reveal a tremendous amount of knowledge about not only the signs of the zodiac, but the manner in which the zodiac itself can be used as a path for self-development and achievement. And that's what the book is about.
Awesome. I myself have not read a lot of astrology books, but if you get that printed, I'll definitely have to check it out.
Thanks. I think people would. You don't need any knowledge of astrology to enjoy the book. The book is written for people who have no knowledge of astrology.
Oh, that's so, awesome.
Most people don't, but it's a helpful introduction to what astrology is all about and to how to use astrology every day is a powerful tool.
Awesome. What would you say is one of the biggest misconceptions about astrology?
Oh, boy. you know, there's actually two, and there's one for the public and one for other astrologers. As far as the public goes, it really doesn't matter whether there's a scientific basis for astrology. Astrology is a language, and astrology teaches you how to view the world and your life in an analytical way so that you can understand what is happening in a more direct manner. It also serves as a way of being able to understand yourself better. And astrology itself, if you think about it, it is mankind's oldest science. It is our oldest thought system. And all of our understanding about ourselves has been put into astrology. It's like a treasure trove of psychological wisdom. Whether you believe that it can give you lucky numbers or tell you what horse is going to win a race or tell you whether or not you're going to be happy and successful, doesn't matter, because it really can tell you more about yourself and about your being than you can find almost anywhere else. And for astrologers, I would say the biggest misconception is the focus on the geocentric chart. By geocentric, I mean earth-centered. The the charts of all of the planets, all of the different relationships that exist between the planets is just as important as the geocentric chart. And thankfully, we have the technology where we can begin developing charts from the other planets. But really, the solar system is a unit. It functions as a whole, and every part of that whole is as important as any other. And once you know how to read the charts of the other planets and how they affect us on this planet, astrology becomes a much more effective system for not only understanding the dynamics of what's happening now, but of what exists within your own being, within your own self. You know, we are all carrying around a little Mars chart within us that tells us a wealth of information about how we go accomplishing things. There's a Venus chart that talks about our relationships. There's a Mercury chart that talks about our intelligence. Each one of the planets has its own chart, and that chart tells us an enormous amount of information about what that planet represents in our lives.
I think my head just kind of went poof. that's a lot of charts.
It is a lot of charts. And but the thing is, once you begin working with them, you begin to understand what they do and what they don't do and how to put them each into perspective. You know, it's not as if they take over the geocentric chart, but they are a good supplement to the geocentric chart.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just mention this. There's a program out on the online. It's been out forever, called Astrolog. Mm-hmm. And if you want to download that program and learn how to construct a chart and see what charts are about, it will also give you the charts from the other planet so that you can play around with that as well. It's a great tool. It's a great program.
It's called
Astrolog.
Again?
Astrolog, and it was put out by Walter Pullen.
So,
and I'm sure if you
two
Google
separate words,
Astrolog, Walter Pullen, you'll be able to bring it up.
Astrolog. Sorry, I'm just trying to get it to... found it. Awesome. I will link that on our Facebook page.
Oh, great.
For anyone who would like to find it. Now... let's see. I'm going to skip some of the questions that we had. Let's see. What do you say? What do the stars say about what's going on in our world today?
Oh my goodness. Well, as you might imagine, they have a lot to say about what's going on in the world today. Pluto is in Capricorn. Pluto has been in Capricorn for a number of years now. Pluto is upending our governmental institutions. It's upending a lot of the institutions that as a society we take for granted, and it's transforming them. And for better or worse, they will never be the same. What direction they eventually take is something that would be helpful to understand better. But I do believe that as Pluto moves further along into Capricorn and begins working into Aquarius, that we'll begin to see sort of a much greater emphasis on participatory democracy. You know, right now we have representative democracy where we elect people to decide what our government is going to do and you know, what the laws are going to be. But I do believe that as Pluto begins moving into Aquarius, that we'll begin seeing more participatory democracy. You'll begin seeing more more propositions, more initiatives. You'll see probably also the development of online voting, where people will begin voting online on things that representatives used to vote on for them. That's one thing. That's Pluto. We've got Neptune in Pisces. Neptune in Pisces right now is redefining what it means to be a religion, what does spirituality mean, what is the nature of our healthcare system, of our institutions, of the places where people go for healing. What is the relationship that we have to that? You know, Neptune usually comes in and casts a pall of a fog around things when it first starts becoming involved in whatever aspect of life it's directing its energy toward. And we've certainly seen that with both religion and healthcare and mental health all come under the auspices of Pisces. And Neptune is redefining, it's reworking. And once Neptune goes into Aries, I think you're going to begin seeing a whole different approach to both religion and the way people heal themselves. You know, we may finally get single payer in the United States.
That would be lovely.
That would be very nice. And then Uranus is in Aries, and Aries is a very martial, it's a very militant sign. It really underscores how everybody is angry and everybody is upset and everybody, you know, we gotta fix this, we gotta fight against the other side. And everybody's taking sides, which is kind of very unhelpful. But Uranus is definitely stirring the pot in Aries, and as soon it's going to begin settling down to Taurus. And once it begins moving through Taurus, it's going to start affecting our financial institutions. But that's a little bit of a ways off. Right now, we're sort of dealing with a lot of cultural influences that are reflecting the amount of anger and disconnect and dispossession and alienation that a lot of people feel. And as Uranus finalizes its way through Aries, I think we'll finally begin seeing people come together rather than move apart. But we're still a little bit away from that. I think you'll see that begin to happen next year.
Wow.
So anyway, yeah. And that doesn't even begin to go into what Jupiter and Saturn are about right now and what the different aspects are and where they're moving. There really is a lot that you can learn by understanding what astrology is and how it affects our everyday life.
Finish your thoughts, please.
There is a reason why astrology is really the backbone of a lot of esoteric systems. If you look at alchemy, if you look at if you look at sort of a lot of the different systems, the tarot, the Kabbalah, they all have astrological influences. They all tie into astrology because astrology deals with some of the very basic fundamental energies of the universe. So they become the building blocks on which to build everything else. And again, it becomes a language and a tool for understanding the way things relate and how they develop.
I was just going to say a minute ago, everything you're talking about, how brain kind of stopped for a moment. When you're talking about, you know, where all the planets were and in the signs and whatnot, what's going on in our world right now, it reminded me of another podcast that I listened to, the Modern Witch podcast. One of their last episodes, I can't remember if it was the last one they released or the one before that, they actually were talking to someone who was talking that brought up this prophecy that someone made back in the 90s or something like that, where they were saying within like so many years or something like that, our political structure was going to go through a major upheaval. And everything they were saying was saying that it's going on like right now. I had meant to look it up, you know, and get like the exact wording for the prophecy and even who said it, and I totally forgot to do that. Ugh, bad, Michael. Bad.
All right, that'd be great. That'd be great to know.
Yeah, but I will definitely look that up. Would you say there are certain times that are astrologically more advantageous for a magical work, like energy work, energy healing, or stuff like that?
Oh, absolutely. On a very basic level, the wheel of the year is astrological. The cycles of the moon are astrological. They all influence the energies that, you know, the astrological energies are like a bat, and it's depending on where you are and what's going on, it tells you what kinds of magic work or what kinds of intentionality are more likely to be in tune with the energies of the universe at the time. From a Wicca perspective or from a pagan perspective, we look at the cycle of the moon and yes, the full moon is when the magical energies are at their peak. But it's a peak for creation. It's a peak for making things happen. There's also the new moon, and the new moon is a perfect time for getting things started. If you follow the lunar track throughout the month, you see that there are various times where, depending on where the moon is, you can see, how can I put this, where what the lunar energies are, how they can help you achieve what it is that you need to do. So, for example, at the first quarter of a moon, you're able to break through personal obstacles better. I mentioned that the full moon is a time for sort of manipulating reality to the way you want it to be. So it's a great way of putting out your intentionality and of doing magic work. At the third quarter or the waning quarter of the moon, it's a time to break through challenges in which you're dealing with other people, sort of social challenges. And then you come back to the new moon again, where it's time to start all over again. But there's a cycle, and if you understand what the lunar cycle is, you can understand how to plan your own energy work around the cycle of the moon. Much like we plan the wheel of the year around the yearly calendar. But there's also the other energies of the planets too. You know, everybody is aware now of Mercury retrograde. It's so funny. You know, back in the day, nobody knew what Mercury retrograde meant. But as we became more technologically proficient and as everybody became more tied to their devices, Mercury retrograde becomes a big deal now because Mercury controls so much of our lives. When Mercury is retrograde, you don't want to be signing new contracts. You don't want to be planning a new release of a computer program. You know, there are certain things during the time when astrological energies are happening, that you either don't want to be doing something or you should be doing something. You know, if you have, I'm just throwing out here, but, you know, if it's the time of year where Mars is trying your sun, this is the time for you to be going out there and conquering the world and doing what you need to be doing and putting yourself forward to achieve the things that you've been planning for a long time and to put your strategies and tactics to work. You don't want to be doing that when Mars is square your sun, because you're likely to be obstructed and the energies aren't likely to be there for you to be able to accomplish what you need to do. So understanding your own chart and what the aspects are going on right now to your natal chart can be very helpful in understanding what you should be doing when.
Now, you did mention Mercury in retrograde. Now, do you have any strategies for adapting to, you know, when Mercury is in retrograde?
Yes, hide and cover. you know, when Mercury is retrograde, things are just going to go awry. It is just the nature of things. So you've got to prepare for the unexpected. It certainly is not a time for mercurial activities progressing the way you would normally expect them to. Now, mercurial activities are commerce, buying and selling, big items, big ticket items. It is electronics. It is computers. It is machinery. It's travel. You know, Mercury really covers a lot of territory. And in a certain way, it includes our own thinking. So it's sort of a good explanation for why people are sort of out of it during a Mercury retrograde. So you have more patience, You have, you're more open to things going not the way you expect them to. It's a challenge. But there are also, you know, the other planets go retrograde too. And when they go retrograde, it is just as significant. When Mars is retrograde, it is no time for putting battle plans into action. It is no time for going to war. It's no time for surgery. It's no time for putting plans into action. You want to be studying things when Mars is retrograde. You want to be working on your internal self, not the external world, when Mars is retrograde. You know, when Jupiter is retrograde, it's no time for making huge investments. You want to stay away from putting money into the stock market during that time. You want to let things grow in their own natural way. And, you know, you can do that with each of the planets. Sun and Moon never go retrograde, but other than that, everybody else does.
I'm so glad that you mentioned that. I was just about to say, one of my good friends, she's my co-host on my other podcast, All Acts of Love and Pleasure, she's been posting a lot of stuff lately about Venus going into retrograde, Venus going into retrograde, and I had never heard that before. And so
yes.
It's interesting to find out that all the planets go into retrograde and they all affect something different.
Yes, that's right. And so when Venus goes retrograde, you've got, you know, you've got a ton of relationship issues. You know, you have relationships, again, relationships not progressing the way you would normally expect them to. People do unusual things. They have unusual needs. People's sort of needs come out of nowhere. It's a very difficult time for bringing people together. When Venus is retrograde. You know, this whole healthcare bill fiasco, you would never hold an important vote in Congress while Venus is retrograde, because people are going to splinter into their own factions, which is exactly what happened. So, you know, there's the personal and there's the political in almost everything. But, yeah, when Venus is retrograde, it's a time when people are more on edge because the way they expect other people to react isn't how people wind up reacting.
Mm-hmm.
Or feeling. You know, a lot of times during Venus retrogrades, we wind up having feelings that come out of nowhere that we don't really understand. So it's a good time to be doing personal work, too. And Venus is retrograde right now. So
get out there and work on yourself. It just dawned on me. I actually have a friend who's having some relationship issues at the moment, and it just dawned on me that, yeah, this is probably affecting it.
Oh, yeah.
I wish I knew a lot more about astrology myself, that I could, you know, talk to him about all this stuff, but I'll just refer him to the podcast later.
Well, you know,
but,
so the thing is, a lot of people become, how can I say it? People become a little bit scared of astrology because it seems to be so complicated, but it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
It is actually very simple and easy to learn. It's like a language, okay? You learn words, you learn the alphabet. But once you learn the alphabet and the words, you learn how to put them together, and that's where the magic happens. But learning the words mm-hmm. and learning the alphabet is easy. There's only 12 signs. There's only 10 planets. There's a handful of major aspects. That's it. That's really all you really need to know. And then once you get those, once you understand what those things are, you begin putting them together and you realize, now you have a tool for understanding the world better.
Mm.
But it's like language. It's very much like language. You, a lot of very simple and easy to learn items can be put together in very complex ways. But learning the items is very easy.
Mm. Has your experience practicing the Unnamed Path had any influence on your approach to astrology?
That actually is a good question. It has, in the sense that it adds another layer of depth to understanding where people are coming from, where people are situated and what their main focus is, so that I am better as an astrologer of being able to relate to them. I think it also has helped understand or added a new dimension to understanding the way the very basic astrological energies work. You know, you have the planet, so you take Saturn, okay? Saturn can be responsibility, and it can be obstruction, and it can be enlightenment. So in a way, you can almost take each one of the planets and analyze them through each one of the deities and construct another layer of meaning to each one of the planetary energies. It's sort of a fascinating concept because obviously there aren't that many people studying the Unnamed Path, and there aren't that many astrologers within the Unnamed Path. But
mm-hmm.
it does add another layer of being able to understand how the different astrological energies affect us, because they affect us through deity, and the manner in which they do so can be depending on whichever deity you're having a relationship with at the moment, if that makes any sense.
So, like, if I'm very much attuned with, like, the dark goddess at the moment, what?
Then you will experience Venus through the dark goddess and Mars through the dark goddess. And that's an interesting way of looking at how the energies might affect you personally.
Mm-hmm.
So... we can talk about that in more detail too later or outside of the podcast, because you could talk the whole session about that.
That, wow, yeah, that might have to, that would definitely be something else to talk about, because that, yeah.
I mean, actually, so if you think about it, the planets were Greek gods, Roman gods. They were deities.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they were looked at by the ancients. That's relevant to us today, through our own system of deity. And it works very powerfully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll definitely have to bring you back for another discussion, because that is definitely something that, you know, we would love to talk about.
If they've been for us, I'd be glad to.
Mm-hmm. Earlier, you were mentioned, we had talked a little bit in the green room, you know, besides your book that you were trying to get published, you made a tarot deck, correct?
Yes. Yes, the Cards of Consciousness.
Now, what's the theme behind this deck? You know, what was your inspiration for it?
Okay, the inspiration for the cards, and as I said, the name of the cards that I have given them are the Cards of Consciousness, and that really is the theme of the card. The cards depict how our consciousness works, so that we can better understand what the dynamic of any particular situation is. But the inspiration for the cards came from a series of books written by Piers Anthony. I had become hooked on Piers Anthony with a book called Think of Zant, and it was sort of this punish, sort of magical fantasy book that Piers Anthony wrote, and he wrote like 25 of these different books, and they quickly devolved into childish, you know, punish silliness. But he also wrote, a very prolific author, he also wrote a space opera that was, I forget the name of the space opera itself, but it revolved around a character called Melody of Mintaka, and she had a tarot deck, and she would read the space age tarot deck, and it would help define how the space opera was progressing. And Piers Anthony loved the tarot deck enough so that he then created a new series of books called The God of Tarot. And in this God of Tarot, he had laid out a tarot deck of 100 cards, which is the number of cards that I have, and it had 5 suits. Completely blew my mind. Because it was long before I had heard of Wicca and spirit and anything else. And the suits, instead of being like clubs and wands and pentacles and whatnot, was doing, feeling, thinking, having, and being. And if you think about it, it's sort of like, you know, earth, air, water, fire, and spirit. And it just opened up a whole series of thoughts within my own mind of laying out how consciousness actually works. I mean, there are principles behind our relationship to the world, and that's what these cards represent. They sort of represent the basic patterns and ways that we think of things, and it lays them out in a spread so that you can actually see them and you can see what's going on with the situation and really better understand how you've created it and what your relationship to it is and what you need to do to have it come out the way you want it to come out, if you can. So, like I said, there are 5 suits.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
5 suits. There are 10 cards in each suit. there are no court cards. So there are 50 sort of, and the trump cards deal with things like states of nature, like transparency or the way energy might move, like whether it's internal or external. And it all sounds very goofy and out there, but once you see the cards and understand what the cards are saying, it's all very easy to put together. And each of the cards has like a, let me go somewhere. You know, so there is a structure to the tarot, and there is a structure to these cards, so that the ace of every suit is about putting that energy out there and of doing it. So you have the suit of doing, the ace of doing being action, and its complement being inaction. You have the second of every suit being the complement of the first, so that on the second card, the two of doing would be what is hidden, what is not known, what you need to do in order to fix the situation. So there's sort of a structure based on these essential principles that underlie each of the meanings of the card. And it's kind of hard to talk about in like 10 minutes, but there is.
Now, well, I was going to say, are these cards are these cards that you use on a regular basis, or whenever you work with a client, or you know, is this something that you are actually putting out, like trying to get your cards published also?
Okay, so they are my go-to cards. If I really want to know what's going on, I consult these cards. I definitely use them with clients. Clients insist on, you know, if I give a reading with these cards, my clients insist that I read them only with these cards. Because you're able to develop a story of understanding what the past, present, and future of the situation is and the reason. You know, one of the powerful aspects of the cards is just the way they get laid out. Each card has a past, present, and future, and a destiny. So in the destiny, you understand the reason for the past, present, and future. And you do that for the past of the past, the future of the past, so that you get an understanding of not only the path that the situation has taken, but you better understand the reason behind what the situation is itself. We should have another session on the cards, because the cards are also a very powerful tool.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, here's one other question. Are you like many other people who I know who read tarot and whatnot? Do you have like a large collection of tarot cards, oracle cards, and whatnot?
I do. I'm not unique in that way. I have tarot cards. You know, if I go into the bedroom, I've got a series of tarot decks in there. If I go to the living room, there's a series of tarot decks there. It's like each room in the house has their own collection of tarot decks. one day I got to put them all together. It's they're all interesting in their own way, and they all have their own aspect of reading things, and it's sometimes it just depends on what mood you're in to what deck you relate to the best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know for myself, whenever I do a reading, I started out with a tarot deck when I was younger myself. I started out with I believe it's called the One World Tarot, which is has a lot of symbols and whatnot on it, and it was far too advanced for a beginner.
but it's the best way to jump isn't it?
Yeah, but I was able to do a good amount of readings with it. But when I got into the Unnamed Path, our rune set that we construct in our apprenticeship course, I use that quite a bit now. Like, I get a lot of good readings from that. And I also have an oracle deck that my partner got for me the year before. Called the Halloween Oracle Deck, and it's beautiful pictures. I very much love Halloween and Samhain, so does my partner. He himself got an older edition of the Halloween Tarot Deck when he got me the Oracle one. So.
Nice.
Yes. And that reminds me, I try to do a weekly reading of either my runes or one of my tarot or oracle decks. And I need to remember to do that when I get off the show today. But let's see. Let's do like a couple more questions. Most of our listeners are familiar with Western astrology. Do you have any experience with systems that are such as Vedic astrology, Chinese astrology, or Aztec astrology?
Yes. I'm least familiar with Aztec astrology, but there is an entire astrological system developed by the Aztecs, and a great deal of it is built on the planet Venus. What's fascinating about the planet Venus is that it forms a fivefold pattern in its orbit around the sun in relationship to the Earth. So you have the pentagram there. You have the pentacle there. They did not look at Venus very favorably. They sort of looked at Venus more malevolently. There's a big difference between Vedic and Western astrology on the one hand and Chinese astrology on the other hand. Vedic and Western astrology deal with more the motions of things. They deal with the planets, and they deal more with the stars or the zodiac or the stars themselves. Chinese astrology has its own zodiac, and it's just as valid as the Western zodiac. But the Chinese astrology is more a measurement of time, quality of time. Every moment of time has a characteristic in Chinese astrology, and it is based on a very highly structured system in which they break down the Chinese zodiac into years, months, days, seconds, hours, and they use the wheel of the zodiac sort of at an increasingly small level, where it sort of defines the moment of time. It's sort of hard to describe, but Chinese astrology describes time. Western astrology, or in Vedic astrology, defines movement, and it defines sort of space as opposed to time. Another way of thinking about it. Vedic astrology and Western astrology have an incredibly interesting relationship, because you can, if you really look at the history of astrology, you can see how Alexander the Great created both of them, because there was an astrology that the Sumerians had, and the Babylonians, and they were really the first astrologers. They were the ones who really made some of the first studies of what the stars were saying and what the planets were doing. And it spread eastward into the very earlier Mohenjo-Daro civilization of the Pakistani valleys. And they developed an astrology that was sort of based on that. And then the Greeks come along and they conquer this whole area. And now, you know, what are the Greeks known for mathematically? They're known for geometry. So they bring geometry to the astrology. And that's really the biggest difference between Western astrology and Vedic astrology. Vedic astrology is the same, although they use a different zodiac. They use the zodiac of the stars, whereas Western astrology uses the zodiac of the equinoxes. And we can talk a little bit about that if you like too. But we use a different zodiac. The two systems use different zodiacs. But the positions of the planets and how the planets relate to each other are similar, although Vedic astrology has, like Hinduism, it has a lot of highly structured and stylized rules of the manner in which the planets relate to each other, whereas Western astrology is more loosey-goosey. It's more symbolic. The planets and the signs have a wider range and freedom of meanings and movements. But you can see, if you look at the history of how astrology developed, you can see how both Vedic astrology influenced Western astrology and how Western astrology influenced Vedic astrology. And it's all through the Greeks. It's all through the Greek conquest of India back in Alexander the Great's time.
Now, you know, those three I mentioned, I unfortunately don't know, are there other, you know, different types of, like, I don't know if you've seen, like, these images going around online that are, they say it's a Native American zodiac or a Celtic zodiac or something like that, which a lot of people, when they share those, they're just doing it because, oh, this looks cool. But what do you say about stuff like that that, you know, happens to go around online, especially that gets shared by a lot of pagans?
Okay, so here's the thing. The zodiac, Dane Rudjar wrote a book in the 70s called The Pulse of Life. That is the zodiac. The zodiac is the pulse of life. As you approach life through your own perspective, you have your own zodiac. So in a way, each of us has our own personal zodiac. Each of us have our own cultural zodiacs. Each of us have our own social zodiacs or religious zodiacs or ethnic zodiacs. I mean, you can have a zodiac for anything. And it has meaning if it has meaning to you, because it is essentially the structure behind birth, life, fulfillment, preparation for rebirth, and rebirth. Now, however you experience that and whatever symbolism you use to represent that is your zodiac. So, yeah, they're all valid. I mean, they all have their own meaning. And one is not any better than the other. It's just what is.
Okay. And you know what? Gosh. You know, there's so much information, and I feel we've definitely just, like, scratched the surface. We've already gotten, like, a couple of new show ideas and whatnot, but we're already, you know, going a little bit over an hour. Do you have any last-minute thoughts or anything you would like to share?
Sure. Learn astrology. You know, astrology is, as I said before, it is one of the essential basic foundations behind any occult work, any kind of witch work, any kind of, if you're working with energies, you need to know astrology, because you need to know different varieties of energies and how they interact with each other. It is much easier to learn astrology than you might imagine. Go online. There are tons of websites that will help you understand astrology. One of my favorite websites out there, besides the website that I used to have a website myself called The Flow. So if you Google Skywatcher 888 and The Flow, you'll find an old blog that I used to run between 2009 and 2013 that has a lot of writings and things that I did about astrology that you might find useful. But I did have to stop in 2013 because it was just becoming, and it became too much of a time-consuming for me. But there is a website out there called Cafe Astrology, and I recommend that very highly. He does very good work. His meanings of things are right on topic, and he really does a very good job of trying to present astrology in an easy-to-digest, easy-to-learn manner. But there's a ton of sites out there. Find one that you enjoy.
Awesome. Gosh, I feel like I just sat through a very, very packed college course. I was like, so much info, and I'm going to have to go decompress because there's just so much info. But thank you again, Bill, for being on the show. We're definitely going to have
you
back.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're definitely going to have you back to talk about a couple of the things that we've touched on that I'm pretty sure we could go for a while to talk about. But
I would love to. Just let me know.
Yes. Awesome. I'm going to play a song, and then I'll come back and do the closing for the show. Let me see. I had one. Here we go. This is S.J. Tucker, Witch's Rune.
Dance with us now, which is a rune. Ah, dance with us now, which is a rune. Ah,
Again, that was S.J. Tucker, Witch's Rune. Thank you again, everyone, for tuning in today or for listening in the archive. That was an awesome episode with Brother Bill. If you would like the websites that Brother Bill mentioned, I'm going to post those to our Facebook page. I'm going to get those up as soon as I end the show. I hope you all have a blessed day. If you'd like to get in touch with Matthew or myself, you can drop us an email at walkingtheunnamedpath@gmail.com. Again, you can follow us on Twitter at walking_theUP, or you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/walkingtheunnamedpath. You know, we hope you had as much fun as I did talking with Bill and just learning all this info about astrology, and we hope to have him back on in a couple of future episodes. So have a blessed day, everyone, and let me get this. Oh my gosh, I totally lost the tab for ending the show. And of course, my computer decides to go slow. Ah, here we go.
Hello, this is Reverend Don Lewis coming to you from witchschool.com. Are you looking for the best in pagan and magical education? With more than 12,000 pages, witchschool.com is like having your own personal library with individual learning assistants to help you study. And Witchschool's anyone, anytime, anywhere education system is available any place on earth, anywhere you are and anytime you want it, as long as you have an internet connection. Witchschool's lifetime memberships are a great value. They really do last a lifetime. They've been there for years, and they'll be there for years to come. So get your membership today at witchschool.com.
You're listening to Pagans Tonight. Pagans unite on Pagans Tonight. Many paths, one network. For over 5 years, we've been the place to connect with the best, brightest, and most trusted voices in the pagan world. Every night is Pagans Tonight.